Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Geektown Radio. It's episode 104 and I have with me Andrew.
Hello everybody, how are you doing?
And
I just realised episode 104, 52 weeks in a year, 104 episodes. Today, this one must be the second anniversary of Geektown Radio.
Yeah, no, it must be actually, you're quite right. yes, I hadn't made that distinction, but yes, it must be. Wow.
Two years of this.
Yes, and I've got you on again for an anniversary episode.
They're coming and ticking fast, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So how are you doing? What have you been up to?
Doing pretty well, thank you. TV-wise, well, we'll go through your weekly list, but yeah, I've been catching up on some of the new things that have started, a lot of which I've enjoyed. Some will come to perhaps not so much, but yeah, I think we're kicking off with a return of a British classic, aren't we?
Yes, yeah. The first thing on my list certainly was Top Gear.
Yeah.
Because it's come back again. What did you think? I'm assuming you've watched it.
I've watched it, and I think, well, first of all, it's excellent scheduling by the BBC, suitably after the Grand Tour has finished and long before the Grand Tour's second series.
Yes.
Compared to the previous one, more Chris Harris, more Rory Reid, no Chris Evans, no Eddie Jordan and no Sabine Schmidt makes it work really well, I thought. The three-person format, which they tried to get away from because of the connection to the previous presenters,
yeah.
it just seems to work better.
Yeah.
I don't think the interplay between the three presenters is quite as slick as the late Clarkson era Top Gear, but
yeah,
I suppose if you compare it to when James May first started in series two.
Yes.
I was going to say after one series of Jason Donovan, but it wasn't Jason Donovan, was it? It was Jason somebody else.
Yes, it was. I can't remember his name. Lost to the annals of history, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a lot more promising this time around. I think Matt LeBlanc needs to work on a more natural delivery. He seems a bit...
Yes.
A bit wooden. And in fact, bizarrely, although he's the main name, he's actually the weakest link of the three. But I think there's considerable promise there.
Yeah. The difference is, I think, this time round is although he is possibly slightly weaker in terms of, which is ironic because he's the actual actor out of the three of them, but they're not gelling quite as well as, you know, Hammond, Clarkson, May. But then, you know, Hammond, Clarkson and May have been doing this for a very, very long time by the end. So I think that's fine. They'll get there. They genuinely do seem to like each other. Some of the studio bits, like you say, do seem a little bit forced at the moment, but I think it will settle. You know, it might not settle entirely this season. It might be next season. But I think the three of them together are very, very watchable. It doesn't annoy me like it did when you had the ginger shouty man on it.
No. And Eddie Jordan was a bit annoying as well.
Yeah, Eddie Jordan was, because he seemed just over enthusiastic to be there, which, yeah. You know. And I mean, they have said that Eddie Jordan and Sabine Schmidt will maybe pop up as sort of guests on some of the things, which is fine. I don't mind that. But, you know, those three as core presenters, they're all kind of elevated to the same status now. It's not like one or two people kind of running the show and sort of, you know, dictating everything that goes on. So it's much stronger than it was. I thought it was quite interesting that they basically had the guest on for almost the entire show as well. I mean, the guest was there for a lot longer.
True. I don't know if that's going to be a thing they're going to run with. I wasn't that... To be honest, in the Clarkson era, it was the star in the reasonably priced car. If there was ever going to be a segment that I would fast forward through, it was that bit.
Right, yeah.
So having a guest on a weekly basis doesn't really interest me that much particularly, but I suspect, as with many things, I'm the only one.
I don't know. I mean, that kind of really depends on the guest, but I thought it was fine because it allows them to chip in on certain things, and they've got the kind of reasonably fast car, I think is what they're calling it now, which is the kind of new thing, which I think is nice because it sort of slightly changes how the laps are going to work and that sort of stuff, and they've got the old track back, and you know, so mm-hmm. so that works quite well. No Stig on the first episode either.
No Stig, no, bizarrely, which is. Yeah, that is strange. But I mean, what is interesting, of course, is that the Grand Tour, instead of a Stig, has an American. And Top Gear now, instead of Clarkson, Hammond and May, also has an American.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, so there you go. But yeah, I think it has legs now. It needed to work. I think it's done the job. Mm. If the rest of the series maintains that level of quality, then I'll be tuning in.
Yeah, and I think it worked. I thought the opening film was handled very well.
Yeah.
And they seem to be having fun with the sort of the Kazakhstan trip that they did. So, yeah, you know, I'm optimistic that it's going to be working. And it genuinely, I had a look around at some of the online reviews afterwards and some of the newspaper reviews, and it seems to have gone down pretty positively. So,
yeah, you know. Mixed to positive, I think the people in the industry say, isn't it? Some people didn't like it, but it definitely seemed to go down better than the previous one.
Yeah. Yeah, so I will be interested to see what the numbers are like when they come in for that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, okay. What do you have next?
Legion, I wanted to just mention, because I know we talked about Legion quite extensively sort of a few weeks ago. I've only just started watching it again because of the fact that I had seen the first three episodes on a press preview. So we've just caught up with the fourth episode now. That's a wonderfully bizarre, weird show. It's one of those shows that you really have to concentrate because it's not letting up for anybody in terms of how the thing's structured and things jump all over the place and stuff pops up that doesn't necessarily make sense immediately and then he's tied in later on in the episode. You know, it's really quite complex for what he's supposed to be or what was sort of billed as an X-Men spin-off. And it really isn't at all. But it's entertaining and fun and I think the characterizations work really well. It's just... Yeah, it's a quite a complex thing to sort of stay on top of. So I'm glad to see that sort of carried on. I mean, the first three episodes are interesting because the first two episodes are a little bit confusing and then the third episode clarifies certain things and then the fourth episode sort of starts to muddy things up a little bit again with sort of characters being not who you thought they were and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's interesting the way that's put together and it's a fairly compact, I think it's only 9 or 10 episodes or something like that. It's not a particularly long run. So it's really, really nicely packed together. And they're full of story, all killer, no filler, as they say. So I'm really enjoying that.
It's not one that I can really get into. I think we always end up disagreeing on things, but that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
I just didn't find myself caring enough about the characters to bother learning what was going on. But I do appreciate, objectively, that it is a very different concept to a lot of things that are on at the moment. There's a lot to watch, and there's a lot of similar concepts that keep being repeated because clearly they work and the numbers work. And it is, even though I'm not enjoying it myself, it is nice to see something very different.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I like having very different sort of interesting shows come up.
But the next one was something I could get into really, really well. This was a good one.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon was the next thing I wanted to mention, which was an adaptation of the movies. We're speaking to one of the cast members later on in the show. I have to say though, I really, you know, when they always come along and say we're doing a TV adaptation of a film, and they've done like Taken recently and various other things which haven't been, and they always seem to be done a little bit half-heartedly. This really isn't. I mean, the Lethal Weapon remake is just, I mean, it is big and American and flashy and silly in places, but it's got a wonderful heart to it. It's got some amazing action sequences considering it's done on a TV budget. It's incredibly well put together. The leads are incredibly likable. The casting's very good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I've actually seen the first two episodes of it, but
I'm the first one.
Yeah, it's, well, I went to a press event in London where they kind of introduced us to it. So I've seen the first two, but it's really good. You know, and not what you'd expect for, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect a Lethal Weapon remake to work so well.
No, and the other thing that you don't necessarily expect is for it to be on ITV of all places, which is tremendous. And I think we could do with more acquisitions of this caliber from ITV. If you're listening, ITV people, then this works really well. One little thing I jotted down was really interesting that Damon Wayans, who plays Roger Murtaugh, his first role was actually in another famous LA-based action comedy police movie, Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yes.
In a bit part. So but like you said, the interplay between him and the other guy whose name I can't remember.
Clay Crawford.
That's the one. Far better than I thought was going to be. Not looking forward necessarily to the appearance of Leo Getz, one of the weakest things and the most annoying thing. He was the Jar Jar Binks of the Lethal Weapon film series. But one little niggle, I suppose, the very see-through, transparent political correctness in the remake, updating Trish, the wife, Trish Murtaugh, from a housewife, as she was in the 80s films, to a millionaire lawyer.
Albeit
one who so far hasn't done any work.
Well, yes, but I'm told, as you will hear in the interview later, because we are interviewing the person that plays Trish, it's a lady called Keisha Sharp, who's absolutely lovely. So we're talking to her later on in the show, but that actually makes quite a lot of sense. I don't think it was done just for political correctness purposes. I think part of it is the fact that it allows a cop to live in a really nice house. So, which is always something that they like to do without him sort of apparently taking money, you know, under the table somewhere. To, you know, it allows a sort of your average detective to have a really, really nice property that they can kind of live in. So it makes it better on screen. It also has the added advantages, as she's the lawyer, you can intertwine her into some of the cases. So it means it improves how much they can use that character. I don't think it's done entirely for that. Plus, I think in this day and age, to have her just as a housewife, which is fine, you know, but it's fine somebody being a housewife. But I think when they're on screen, if you can do something that makes that character sort of more integral to the plot in some way, which I think this does, I think that makes more sense. But and you've also got like changes about the things with Roger, about, you know, him having had a heart attack and actually wanting to carry on working rather than him wanting to leave the force, which was another change as well. There are little tweaks to a lot of the characterizations, which I really quite liked. So, I mean, on the whole, I think it works really well. So I'm looking forward to the rest of it. I suspect Leo Getz might not be quite as annoying as he was in the movies either. So we'll see when that comes up. But it's gone down really, really well as far as I can tell. It's certainly gone down very well in the US. So we'll see. Hopefully it does well for ITV as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing that came back this week was Quantico, which was back for a second season, which I really enjoyed the first season of. I did wonder what they were going to do with this, because the entire premise of Quantico was it was sort of set in two time periods, following a group of students through Quantico, the FBI training academy, and then an assignment post them graduating where one of the people gets blamed for blowing up Grand Central Station in New York. Mm-hmm. That was the sort of premise of the first season. So Quantico was kind of quite integral to that. Now, obviously, by the end of it, they've all kind of got to have graduated, because you've seen where they've gone next. So it was a case of, well, how are they, what are they going to do for the next season? And what they ended up doing was taking that lead character and putting her through the CIA training. So it actually has nothing directly to do with Quantico now. It's to do with the farm, which is the CIA's secret training facility. So she's now going through training there, and it uses the same format of, you know, she's going through training there, and then it jumps forward a year, and it's sort of her post her training and what she's doing there. There are some slight twists to that as well, but I won't go into those. I find it thoroughly enjoyable. I think it's good fun. it's fairly twisty and turny. It's got some quite good kind of twists in it, and I find it just really entertaining. It's a really entertaining show, that.
Yeah, it is. The flashback thing was a bit different from the norm. I'm not sure about the suddenly jumping to the CIA. Does that mean in season 3 she'll be training with the NSA, and then in season 4 she'll be training with West Midlands Police?
yeah, very possibly at this point. That is the slight problem with what they're doing at the moment, is where do they go for season 3? Because if it's got to be a training facility, or do they have her as one of the instructors at a training facility, maybe, and bringing in a new bunch of recruits? I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's one of those shows. It's like with TV shows set in schools. You have to have a sort of rotation of cast to a certain extent, because you may have core cast members, but they're, you know, at some point they've got to age out and do something else. So we'll see how it goes. That's all for my TV. The only other thing I've been doing this week is Elite Dangerous, which I'm back on playing again, which I know you don't really game, so we can't massively talk about that. But
well, you say that, but I have actually been playing a game just this last week. I've been teaching my son how to play Connect 4, which is a bit lower concept perhaps than some of the stuff that you play, but it's just fantastic to remember, having done it from the other side of the board more decades ago than I would care to admit.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
But TV wise, I mean, they're not, I don't think they're all started this week, but let me just, I've been watching, you probably talked about it last week, I've been watching 24 Legacy.
Yes.
Enjoying it quite a lot, actually, but I can't quite invest in it as much yet as the original at its peak. Although the original did have troughs to go along with these peaks.
Exactly.
It may be that the lead just isn't quite as engaging yet as Kiefer Sutherland, but it does seem to have learned from some of the flaws of the original, such as the woman with the very annoying voice in season 4, or the ridiculous Scooby-Doo antics of Kim Bauer in season 1.
Yeah. Yes.
It is a bit of a stretch to see Gerald McCraney, who's 69, playing the father of Jimmy Smits, who's 61, which is a bit odd. Although McCraney does have the potential to be a baddie with the gravitas of President Logan, that sort of thing. I can't quite tell whether he's going to be white, black or grey in this one.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, that sort of reveal that we had, that he does appear to be on the bad side, and we don't quite know why at the moment. But it's a really good show. I'm really enjoying 24 Legacy. I think it's a bit more ensemble, whereas the 24 itself was far more about Jack Bauer, you know, and so focused on him. I think, although Corey Hawkins is the lead in this, I think it feels rather more ensemble than one kind of standout lead. But I think he's really good in it. So, you know.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a lot of promise there. I think I may be incorrect in saying we're going to get a cameo from somebody from the original 24 later on this series.
Yes, we are.
We're not going to say what. Although that said, anybody that reads the internet probably already knows.
Yes, we may have mentioned it on the show before. Should also mention that if you are a fan of 24 Legacy, Matt and myself do a 24 Legacy podcast over on Entertainment Talk. If you want to go and specifically listen to me and Matt drone on about 24 Legacy, so
do it. Yes, definitely. A couple of other things. SGB, you've been watching that?
Yes, yeah, I'm a little bit behind at the moment, but I have started watching it, yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's a similar concept, obviously, to The Man in the High Castle, but being British and not American, it has much more of a slow burner.
Yeah.
But due to the lead character inexplicably being given a voice like Bane from The Dark Knight Rises, the BBC was forced to adjust the sound for the second episode because of claims of mumbling, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
And again, back for the final time is Person of Interest. You're watching the final series of that?
Yes. That is another thing that I have started watching again. Yes,
it's
really good.
It's a bit slow at the moment, this final season. Hopefully we'll pick up pace quite soon, but I'm enjoying its final outing, and hopefully will end well.
Yeah.
The guy that plays Finch, Michael Emerson.
Yes.
How old do you reckon he is?
He's one of those people that I would say looks like he's probably in his late 40s, but I suspect he's a lot older than that.
He's 62 and he does not look it.
Is he really?
Yeah. Can you imagine? 62. I said about 49, same as you.
Yeah.
He does not look 62.
No.
And just touching on films a bit, because for once when we had these conversations, I have actually seen a film, which is amazing.
Yes.
And that Lego Batman. The kids enjoyed this a lot.
Yes,
obviously, but as a film, it cannot sit still for any more than 2 seconds, and I was quite tired and seasick by the end of it. If you've ever wondered what an expensive computer being sick for over an hour might look like, then go and watch this one. But then that's just me being cynical. Everybody else seemed to enjoy it.
Yes. Well, I haven't seen it yet. It's probably one that I will watch when it comes out on DVD or onto streaming. So I will watch it then. But I love the original Lego movie. And I know I don't think this is the same people, but it's sort of some of the same cast. And I love Batman, obviously, as well. So yeah. I'm inclined to like this.
Sends it up, which is a good kind of counterpart to the particularly dark latest outing of Batman.
Yes.
And then lastly, but not leastly, a film that perhaps nobody else besides me has heard of called Rogue One has a DVD and Blu-ray release of the 10th of April.
Ah, yes. Did you not see that at the cinema?
Nope, didn't see it. And when I did have a chance to see it, it was in that interim period when films are no longer on at the cinema, but the DVD isn't out yet. So you get this twilight zone where you can't actually watch something that you want to watch.
Yes, yeah. It's annoying when that happens. It is definitely worth watching. I really enjoyed it. I think it's very, very well put together. The CGI work is pretty excellent throughout. It was a really interesting idea on how it slots into the other Star Wars movies as well. So I will probably go and buy myself a copy of that when it comes out, I suspect.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's one I want to watch. Like I said, it was when I phoned the branch, which is actually an incredibly difficult thing to do these days, actually phoning a branch of a cinema.
Yeah.
You can't do it directly. But when I did, I was told basically it had been on for, I think it was about 7 weeks by that point, which is probably long enough, but it was because something about shades of paint, 70 shades of paint or something was on. And that was why it was bumped, and that I found that quite annoying, because I think I would probably rather watch Rogue One than whatever the other thing was about.
Yes, yeah. Should mention actually, there are some other things out obviously at the moment in the cinema which I'm quite interested in seeing, Logan being one of them. But if you're near a Cineworld in Birmingham, Cardiff, Crawley, Glasgow, Ipswich, London, Milton Keynes, Sheffield or Stevenage, they've put in those particular cinemas something called 4DX. 4DX is a new cinema experience. The idea is that it includes high-tech motion seats and special effects like fog and wind and lighting effects and sort of rain and smell and all that sort of stuff is piped into the sort of back of the seat in front of you. So as the film goes through, the seat will move and it will like fire stuff at you. You may have been on one of this if you've been to like a Disney World or that sort of place. You know, they have 4DX cinemas in those sort of places, but they're now starting to actually bring them into normal cinemas, and they have a specific like effects track which is tailored to the movie, so it synchronizes up with all the action on screen. It's supposed to be very, very good. I have yet to actually manage to try it. I'm hoping to maybe go and try it with Logan this week.
It sounds like it would work really well. Is it not similar to D-Box that came out a few years ago? Maybe I'm getting mixed up. I think this seats just rumbled, or perhaps a more basic version of what you've just described.
Yeah, I think that's probably a slightly more basic version of it. But the 4DX is the seats supposedly move. I don't know how much, but it says high-tech motion seats. So, and special effects and stuff.
All that stuff coming out of the seat in front of you, that would work, I would imagine, really well with kind of historical dramas, perhaps, definitely action films, but you probably wouldn't want to go and watch There's Something About Mary in one of those, in case.
No, possibly not. The moment the 4DX films they're running are Logan, which I think is running till Thursday it looked like, and then certainly on my on the one in Birmingham, Beauty and the Beast is on there after that, then Kong Skull Island, Ghost in the Shell, and Fast and Furious 8. So yeah, I mean, if I think Beauty and the Beast is an interesting one to put in that, but anyway, that's what they've done, unless it fires glitter at you, maybe, I don't know.
Possibly.
It being Disney. So have you got anything else to put in, or should we move on?
Move on. Let's okay. Let's hear about some news this week.
TV and film news this week. The first story we have up is to do with Marvel's Inhumans and the casting. We had a little bit of casting last week where Ewan Rheon, who is in Game of Thrones, plays Maximus the Mad, who is brother to the lead character of Black Bolt. Over the weekend, they announced the rest of the main casting for it, including Black Bolt himself. So Black Bolt is going to be played by a man, if you're a fan of Hell on Wheels, you will know him as Cullen Bohannon, but he's called Anson Mount, who is a brilliant bit of casting for this. Black Bolt is the leader of the Inhumans, and the most interesting thing about that character is that his power is linked to his voice. So even the slightest whisper can send out a shockwave with the power to level a city. So consequently, the character is mute throughout the entire thing, which is a very interesting thing to approach, I imagine, if you're an actor. Did you watch Hell on Wheels? I don't know whether that's a show you ever watched.
I started watching it when it first came out, but never really continued with it.
Right, yeah. So you're aware who Anson Mount is, anyway?
No.
Anson Mount is the guy that...
I'd have to Google it.
Okay, Anson Mount is the guy that played the lead in that show. So Black Bolt is an interesting sort of character for an actor to play, because you sort of want somebody with a fairly expressive face, given that he's going to have to play the entire thing mute throughout.
Well, it's the eyes, I think. I've just Googled the picture. He's got, I think you can tell by the eyes this is going to work really well.
Yeah, and he does have quite an expressive face as well. So I think that could work very, very well. So I think that's a great bit of casting. Also in cast, Surinder Swan, who is playing Medusa. And Medusa is wife of Black Bolt. She's queen of the Inhumans. She's his most trusted advisor, fiercely resilient warrior who has the ability to move and control her hair the way most people use their hands and fingers. Surinder, you might know because she played Zatanna in Smallville. She's popped up in. She was also in Graceland, which was a great little series, which I think only ran for 3 or 4 seasons. And she's had a reoccurring role in Chicago Fire as well, which I've never seen. So, but yeah, I think that's quite a nice bit of casting as well. And that's quite an interesting character. She's going to have large CGI hair, I suspect.
Yeah, it'd be a bit like who's the chap in Pirates of the Caribbean with the...
Oh, yes.
Davy Jones.
Yes, yeah. So, sort of like that, but it's sort of her hair that works. Ken Leung, who was in Force Awakens, he popped up in Person of Interest. He was in Lost as well. He's playing Karnak, who is Black Bolt's cousin and closest advisor. His gift is the ability to see the fault in all things, people, plans, structures, everything. He's Black Bolt's most ardent supporter and strategist, and often seen as the royal family's planner and philosopher. That sounds like kind of an interesting character. Emi Ikwuanto, I think is his name. I'd probably pronounce that very wrong. He was in Extant. He's playing Gorgon. Gorgon is cousin of Black Bolt. Is another cousin of Black Bolt. He's the leader of Atalan's military. Super strong legs, complete with hooves, and can generate destructive seismic waves with a single stomp.
So he's basically Mr. Tumnus.
Yes. The yin to his cousin Karnak Yang. So yes, you've got Karnak, who is, sees the fault in everything. He's a sort of planner and philosopher. This guy seems to be far more gung-ho. Gorgon will rather fight than talk to solve his problems. Then we've got Isabel Cornish, who is Crystal. Isabel Cornish, she's been in a few different things, but Home and Away is probably the thing that UK audience will know her for. She's sister to Medusa, youngest member of the royal family, has the ability to control the elements. She's impetuous, independent, and is deeply devoted to her family. So basically the annoying little kid sister, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, definitely, yes.
Mike Mo, who has been in Empire and played Ryu in the Street Fighter movies, is playing Triton.
Let me guess, he's another cousin?
Yes, he is another cousin. Blabbold has a lot of cousins. He's calm under pressure and supremely athletic. His gift is his fish-like ability to live underwater. Now, are you going to say, be interested to see with this character, because Triton in the books, it basically is green with gills and scales. So that's, if they're going to follow the books, that's full body green makeup every single time the guy's on screen, which is a lot if they're doing it with physical makeup and not a CGI character. But
he'll be up a lot earlier in the morning than certain people who are speaking right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So that will be interesting to see whether they tone that down or whether they are going to force him through a massive makeup process every time they shoot. Sonia Balmores, who was in a movie called Beyond the Break and Soul Surfer, plays Oran. She's head of the Royal Guards of Atalan and capable no-nonsense woman. She's fiercely loyal to the king. Ellen Wuglom, who was in Californication and Outlaw, is playing a as yet undisclosed character, described as smart, intense, and focused, so focused that oftentimes social skills take a back seat. Her job as a private aerospace company is her life, second only to her passion for all things space and lunar. She's primed to be switched up in adventure. So I'm guessing that character is the way into the Inhumans, sounds to me. Because the fact that she's into space and she runs a private aerospace company, that to me says that that's probably the person we're going to end up starting with, and she's going to be the way that we get to into the Inhumans, I would say.
She'll be our audience eyes and ears.
Yes, I think so. The one final character that they mentioned as well is Lockjaw as himself, which is Crystal's 200-pound canine companion. He's basically a giant bulldog.
As himself.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. My guess is that's either some sort of, it's going to be CGI trickery, obviously, to get that to work. But yes, it's basically a giant bulldog that character is. So, and he has the ability to teleport, apparently. So
as if a 2,000-pound bulldog was not scary enough.
Yes, a teleporting 2,000-pound bulldog.
Yeah. My goodness, stay away from that. So that's a lot of characters.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder how much you're going to have them on screen, and obviously, primarily, it's going to revolve around Black Bolt and, I would guess, Maximus and Medusa. It's how much you see all the sort of extra, you know, cousins, which there are a lot. Whether you see them on screen as much, I don't know.
It depends on the budget, doesn't it? I mean, clearly there's going to be a lot of cost in Medusa's hair, and if she's in every episode, you would expect to see the fish man and the dog, if they're expensive to create, a bit less.
Yeah, you would have thought. And if you're seeing the dog a bit less, you're probably going to see Crystal a bit less, since it's her dog. Yeah, I don't know.
It reminds me a little bit of Manimal, this man that had the ability to transform into literally any animal ever, but because of budget constraints, it was always either a panther or an eagle.
Yes, because those are the things they had the stock footage for. Yeah.
Yes, they had a panther lying around somewhere, so they just used it every week.
Yeah. Yes, I remember Manimal. I love that show. It was only about 8 episodes before it went off air as well.
It was. Unsurprisingly, it's dated quite badly now.
Yes. Manimal, Automan was the other one I remember from that sort of time period.
Auto, yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Brilliant 80s shows. We've not got a UK air date for this yet. We know it's coming to IMAX cinemas in the US at the start of September. We don't know whether it's going to come in IMAX worldwide or not. The entire season is coming to ABC on the 26th of September, and it's only 8 episodes as well. So, I mean, it might be expensive, but then they're only doing 8 episodes of it. So, you know, that may have balanced it out somewhat. Again, don't know whether it's going to land on a network over here. I'm betting it's going to land somewhere, but
It'll end up on Netflix. It's got that kind of feel about it.
Quite possibly. I mean, that would be a reasonable place for it, but we'll see. We'll see where it turns up. Moving on to some other shows, Amazon announced 5 new pilot shows for its spring season. Because you know how Amazon do this thing of they put one episode of a show out and then let the audience of Amazon Prime vote on it to see what they should be making for the next season.
It's true. It's an interesting way of doing things, but it's quite hard to invest in the Amazon pilots. I mean, obviously, a lot of them just don't go anywhere. So you watch this pilot of something that you really enjoy and you never hear that that's the end of it. There was one that came out about the first time or the second time they did it, about the same time as Bosch, which did make it to series. I can't even remember the name of the program, but it was about some random people in LA waking up to find the rest of the population all dead. And it was really interesting and we never got to find out what happened.
It's such a shame. But at the end of the day, it's playing to their audience. So if there's enough people out there that go and like something, it just shows you how important it is that people go and vote on these things.
True. All the other networks and cable, you know, every other production has a pilot. It's just we're just used to not seeing the pilot. If it doesn't go anywhere, we never see it, and that's it's just a different way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Amazon releasing these to the public is a really interesting way of doing it, and we've got some great shows out of it. I mean, you know, Sneaky Pete came out of a pilot. We've got a Tick reboot coming out of the pilots. As you mentioned, Bosch came out of pilots. So, you know, there have been some good shows come out of that. I think Men in the High Castle came out of a pilot as well. Yeah, I mean, they're good, interesting shows and, you know, can go on to be quite big. So this time around, there are 5 shows. There's The Legend of Master Legend is the first one, which is a dark comedy about the life of Frank LaFont, who is AKA Master Legend, a homemade superhero whose mission it is to protect the people of Las Vegas from evildoers. Master Legend juggles the demands of justice with the even more complicated demands of his real family, who don't see him as a hero at all. John Hawkes from Winterburns, Dawn Lewis from Major Crimes, Shea Wingham from Boardwalk Empire, and a newcomer called Angelica Washington. I don't know. What do you think? Thoughts on that one?
Confusing by the sounds of it. It might end up being a fairly straightforward thing. Sometimes it's hard to tell from... You do wonder sometimes the people that write these short blurbs about forthcoming programs, if they're actually involved in producing it or they're just in the marketing department. I can't think of examples right now, but there are plenty where the description in advance actually ends up bearing very little resemblance to the program that you watch on screen.
Yeah, I mean, this basically...
I'd watch that. That sounds
I mean, it's superhero-based. It's based in Las Vegas, which is kind of an interesting place to put a superhero, because given that if you've ever wandered around Las Vegas at night, it's full of people in costumes anyway. So they're sort of, you know, people in Spider-Man costumes, bad Spider-Man and Superman costumes trying to get you to take their pictures, to, you know, and tip them. So that's sort of an interesting place to put it. And the idea that his family don't see him as a hero and he's sort of, I'm assuming he doesn't have superpowers if he's a homemade superhero. Yeah. So I don't know. That could be kind of interesting. There's one called Budding Prospects. This is set in 1983. It's 3 hapless city boys moved from their comfort zone of the San Francisco counterculture to Mendocino to grow marijuana. Their expectations of experience being back to the land nurturing adventure in a beautiful rustic setting run upon the harsh truth prior to their arriving at the summer camp, a miserable rundown shanty in the middle of nowhere where they are bedeviled by rats, snakes, mosquitoes and harsh and unfriendly growing conditions, noisy neighbours, dangerous locals and menacing law enforcement. I don't know.
That sounds different.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, it is a pop comedy, and yeah, I don't know. I'm not that enthused about it, but I mean, I suppose set in 1983 could be quite good fun.
If they get the kind of, if they do a very 80s thing with the clothing and the attitudes and everything, that could make it quite funny. I mean, it doesn't actually specifically say in that blurb that it's a comedy, but I'm assuming it is a comedy.
No, you're right, it doesn't, but I'm assuming it is some form of comedy, even if it's a dramedy of some description, but I suspect it's far more comedy. It's got Joel David Moores in, who is in Bones and played one of the interns. You've got Adam Rose from Veronica Mars, Will Sasso from Mad TV, and Brett Gelman from Fleabag, the boys, city boys that are in it. Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, a bunch of city boys move to rural area to grow pot is basically the premise of it. And as a setup for a film, I can sort of see that working, but I don't know, stretched out over a TV series, I'm not sure.
Well, it's kind of like City Slickers mixed with Breaking Bad.
Yes.
In the 80s, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Whether it works or not, well, we'll find out.
Yes. Interesting. There's one called The New VIPs, which is an adult animated comedy. New VIPs follows a group of low-level employees who seize control of a major corporation after accidentally murdering their boss. That's all you get for that.
I mean, technically, murdering by its very nature is not accidental. It's if we're being technical, it's manslaughter.
Yes.
That's probably not the point, though, is it?
I don't know. As an animated series, that's sort of an interesting premise for a setup. I mean, that would be an interesting premise for a setup for...
live action.
Yeah, live action, yeah. So, but they've gone down sort of animated. It's created by Steve Dildarren, who is the guy behind The Life and Times of Tim. The cast are Matt Brunger from Agent Carter, Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec, Missy Pyle from Gone Girl, and Jonathan Adams from Last Man Standing. So, you know, it's got a fairly solid voice cast behind it. I know Life and Times of Tim was not that popular because I don't think it lasted that long, but was sort of got quite good critical reaction, I seem to remember. So that's quite good. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, adult animation is not really my thing, but what it does make me think of is whatever happened to that one about a He-Man type character living in the real world.
I don't know whether it's actually got picked up for a second season. I don't think it has at the moment. I'm not sure. Son of Zorn, that was called.
That's the one.
I don't know what's happened to Son of Zorn.
Did it ever make it here?
No, it never landed over here. I don't know. It ran 13 episodes and received fairly mixed reviews, so I don't know whether it's going to get picked up for another one. But it never actually aired over here, or hasn't yet. Whether it will turn up at some point, I don't know. But I will be quite interested to see it.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that. But yeah, as I said, adult animation, I don't think is really my thing. I would watch it if it was a particularly interesting concept, but I would probably err nearly always towards something live action if it was a choice for that particular time slot.
I have actually watched the first episode of Family Guy. I'd watched in a very long time, and I watched that this week because they did the Family Guy Simpsons crossover, and that went out on Fox this week. So it's still on the catch up if you want to go and see it. But that's the first one I've watched in a while. And that is a fun show. I do enjoy that. But it depends whether you like Seth MacFarlane's humour or not. And I know that's a bit sort of, you know, some people were very turned off by Seth MacFarlane's stuff. So
I don't know. I mean, I'll show my age by saying that I used to really, really enjoy watching Beavis and Butthead. Going back a bit. And I think that's style-wise a forerunner to the Seth MacFarlane type things.
Yeah, yeah.
Even before South Park, and that's been on a long time.
Yes, yeah, South Park's been going a very long time. So next one we've got is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is written and directed by Amy Sherman-Palladino. Amy Sherman-Palladino, who's the person behind Gilmore Girls, which you know is a show that I absolutely adore. And it's exec produced by Daniel Palladino, who is other half, and from Family Guy. He's been part of the Family Guy team. So it's set in 1958 Manhattan. Midge Maisel, which is played by Rachel Roshan, who was in House of Cards, has everything she ever wanted, the perfect husband, two kids, and an elegant Upper West Side apartment, perfect for hosting Yom Kippur dinner. But her perfect life is suddenly taken an unexpected turn as Midge discovers a previously unknown talent, one that will change her life forever. She charts a course that takes her from her comfortable life on Riverside Drive through a basket houses and nightclubs of Greenwich Village as she storms the world of stand-up comedy, a course that will ultimately lead her to a spot on Johnny Carson's couch. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel stars Michael Ziegen from Boardwalk Empire as Midge's husband, Joel Maisel, Alex Borstein from Family Guy as Sydney Merson, Golden Globe winner and three-time Emmy winner Tony Shalhoub as from Monk as Midge's father, Maureen Hinkle from Two and a Half Men as Midge's mother. So set in 1958 Manhattan, which is kind of interesting.
Well, the period side of it is interesting, but I think everything else doesn't really appeal to me that much.
Yeah, it's sort of housewife becomes stand-up comedian, basically. It seems to be the premise of it. I don't know. It's difficult. I know what you mean. The description doesn't sound very inspiring, but I like the people behind it. I like the casting. So I don't know. It's possibly one I will watch to see what it's like, I think. But yeah, the description itself doesn't make it sound massively inspiring. So
no, and I don't. Pilot maybe, single episode maybe, just don't see a series in that. But you know, I've been wrong once or twice.
I don't know. It's difficult because it's about her journey, or it sounds like it's basically about her journey from being this sort of well-to-do housewife to being a stand-up comedian. And as a limited run, that's fine. But where do you go after that?
Exactly. Once she's a stand-up comedian, then what? It's just a film about, it's just a series about somebody being a stand-up comedian.
Which, you know, is fine in some cases, but yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean,
it's Louis, isn't it?
It's Louis or Seinfeld, yeah. Which is, yeah. You know, but set in the 1950s. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
And then the last one we've got is a documentary about a famous Manchester band, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it is called Oasis, yes. But no, it's not a documentary about a famous Mancunian band. It's based on the cult hit novel Book of Strange New Things. It stars Richard Madden from Game of Thrones, and it follows a chaplain who is sent into space to help establish a colony on a distant planet. What he ends up discovering is not only puts his faith to the test, but life as we know it. Its pilot also stars the world-renowned Indian actor and producer Anil Kapoor, who was in 24 and Slumdog Millionaire, played the host of a millionaire in the show. He runs the head of base of operations. Michael Shaw, who's in Limitless as BG, and Jet Tool.
Anta Trower.
Okay, there you go. She was in Man of Steel as Granger. Mark Addy from Game of Thrones as well as Halloran. Hayley Joel Osment from Sixth Sense, as Sai. Maureen Sebastian from American Gothic. You've got Michael Schaefer from Coach Sinclair. Zone Ashton from Nocturnal Animals. It's written by Matt Charmer, who was the guy that wrote Bridge of Spies. It's exec produced by people behind The Crown, Night Manager, Last King of Scotland, Kevin MacDonald, who was the director of Last King of Scotland, and many, many other things he's directing. Given the cast in that, and the fact that it's a sort of sci-fi premise, and the people behind it, and the fact that it's Kevin MacDonald, I'm quite excited to see that one.
I think that one, yeah, I was going to say it's a big cast.
Yeah.
Again, like the previous one, they may not all be in it to the same degree, but massive pedigree there, big cast, fascinating concept if it works. Just, you know, no Liam Gallagher, unfortunately.
No, although
I would watch that definitely. I'll be watching that one.
I'm sure there are some people that would be quite happy if you shot Liam Gallagher into space.
Apart from Noel Gallagher, you mean?
I think Noel Gallagher would be over the moon if you shot Liam into space.
Possibly.
So those are all the new shows. I think out of that lineup, Oasis, I quite like the sound of. Yeah. Legend of Master Legend could be interesting. Oasis, I think, is the standout one for me, though.
I would say so. I'm a bit more enthusiastic about the Marijuana one than you, but again, it might end up being just a... Well, all of them might end up being just a pilot.
Yeah. So I think they come on very soon, I seem to remember. I haven't actually got the date down here, but I think it's this month they come on. Some point.
Right.
So
quite a lot happening this month.
It's this month or next month, and you'll be able to kind of, they'll sit up there, you'll be able to go and watch them. I have a feeling it was the 17th of March, but I could be wrong about that. So last story we've got this week, Benedict Cumberbatch is to star in a show called Melrose, which is a joint production between Sky Atlantic and Showtime. It's a 5-part series, so it's not a long thing. As it said in the, when I wrote this up, Benedict Cumberbatch from Sherlock and Star Trek, and frankly, if you don't know who he is, what on earth are you doing here? He's starring and exec producing in it. It's based on the acclaimed Patrick Melrose series of semi-autobiographical novels written by Edward St. Aubyn. Melrose hilariously skewers the upper class as it tracks the protagonist's harrowing odyssey from a deeply traumatic childhood through adult substance abuse and ultimately towards recovery. BAFTA Award nominee David Nichols is set to write all 5 episodes. He wrote Far From the Madding Crowd and One Day. Cumberbatch is playing Melrose, an aristocratic and outrageously funny playboy who struggles to overcome the damage inflicted by an abusive father and a mother who tacitly condones his behaviour. What's interesting about this is, asked in 2013 if he could play literally any character in a Reddit Ask Me Anything, the character he picked was Patrick Melrose. So
and now he is.
Yeah, and now he is. So this is another original drama coming to Sky Atlantic, which they've promised to bring one new big screen drama to the screen every month, and they seem to be doing that at the moment. They're doing that fairly well, I would say.
Yeah, big pockets, and it shows. I mean, I'm quite excited about this one. I think this one sounds really good.
Yeah, it does sound good. It's I mean, it's always good to have Benedict Cumberbatch on screen because he's always good to watch. This is obviously a project that he's very passionate about because he's wanted to play this for a very long time. So yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to this. I think it could be good. And as a general rule, the Sky Atlantic original stuff has been up there with HBO quality stuff in quite a lot of places. I think they've been doing very well. So
yeah, I think it's Britain's kind of version thereof, more or less. Do you remember the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
Yes.
In that, and our millennial listeners won't have a clue what I'm talking about, but in that, Rob Newman played a character called Jarvis, who appeared periodically in a dinner jacket, in a smoking jacket.
Yes.
That is exactly what I'm thinking of when I'm picturing Patrick Melrose. I know it's going to be completely different, but I'm laughing about it already and it hasn't been made yet.
Yes. Yeah, I can see what you mean. Definitely. Yes. Mary Whitehouse Experience, go and look up clips on YouTube. They're very, very, very funny.
If you don't want to watch it all, then at least find History Today, because
History Today was brilliant.
I promise you will laugh out loud. Yeah. Final bit of news.
Go on. Yes, you had something you wanted to add.
It's not about a production, but it's about a platform, YouTube.
Yes.
YouTube has, Google-owned YouTube, has announced that it's going to begin streaming of US network and cable channels for something like $35 a month. This notion is referred to, I think, as cord cutting, and is probably quite frightening to more traditional suppliers of television. There's no date for it yet, and it is only the US for now, and not even the whole of the US at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think it's reasonable to say we should expect a lot more of this sort of thing in the next few years.
Absolutely.
And it's probably not a stretch to imagine people like Apple working on a similar service.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you are going to get more and more of this. What it causes problems with over here is when they get stuff exclusively, because then that's another service you have to buy.
Well, that's it. You've got your satellite or your cable or your free sat. Well, obviously, if you have free anything, then it's free. But you still have your TV license as well.
Yeah.
Then you have $5.99 or $7.99 to Netflix, another $7.99 to Amazon. And then occasionally you've got something like Fear the Walking Dead, which appears on BT's obscure, whatever it's called, thing that nobody has.
Yes, BT TV, I think it's called.
That's it. And then you wait for that to come out on DVD. And then, of course, when the backup option of DVD ultimately ends, it's not going to be tomorrow, but you can reasonably expect that physical discs will stop existing at some point. You have this issue of multiple subscriptions.
Yeah.
And that problem is not going to be fixed, because no one platform is ever going to have all the content that you want.
No, that is true. But as we say, the best way, as we've said a number of times, the best way to get the best and broadest selection of stuff if you're on a budget is to not get Sky TV, but get Now TV, get an Amazon Prime subscription, and get Netflix. And those three are fairly cheap to do individually. They're certainly less than a standard Sky subscription and will give you three times the amount of stuff. So, you know, all those in a free view box, which is, you know, 50 quid one-off fee or whatever, that will cover pretty much everything.
The only problem with that, of course, if you have a perfectly functioning television set that isn't yet a smart television set, then you still have to get a smart TV first in order to be able to do all that, unless you want to watch things on iPads and that sort of stuff.
Yes, that is true. Although you can get boxes that plug in to the TV that will convert them into smart TVs. So so that is your way around that. And they're not that expensive either. I mean, you can get those for sort of, you know, 30 quid, 50 quid, something like that. If you go and look on Amazon or wherever, you can find various boxes that will do that. So, you know, there are options out there for people. Or, I mean, one of the cheapest ways to do it and give you some gaming, actually, is to go and buy an old PS3. That will also do it.
I still have a new PS. Well, say that. It was new when I bought it at PS3, and it is still a very, very good thing to have under the TV for all the stuff that it can do besides playing games.
Yes, playing games and installing apps on it to allow you to watch various different things. It's quite good, and it makes a great Blu-ray player. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
If you, you know, go and find a cheap PS3 on second hand somewhere, that's one way of doing it. That is all the news for this week. Next up, we'll move on to our interview. This week's interview, as we mentioned earlier, is with Lethal Weapon's Keisha Sharp. Keisha is an LA-based actress. You may have seen her as Dale Cochran in the People vs. OJ American Crime Story. She was Sheila in Everybody Hates Chris, Monica in Girlfriends, and Gigi in Are We There Yet? Her latest role is as Trish Murtaugh, wife of the iconic Roger Murtaugh, played by Damon Wayans, on the new TV adaptation that we were talking about earlier of Lethal Weapon. Unlike a lot of the TV and film remakes, this one is really good. It's a great update of the source material. We had about 15 minutes to just have a little chat with her just about coming onto the project, what it's like working with Damon and Claim Crawford, who plays Riggs on the show. Here's the interview. We'll see you afterwards with our highlights for next week on TV. Hi, Keisha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Thank you for spending a bit of time today just to talk about your new TV show.
Absolutely.
So you're playing Trish Murtaugh on Lethal Weapon. Start off with the obvious question. Were you a fan of the original movies?
Oh my goodness, I was a fanatical fan. I still am. so much so when I read the script, well, before I read the script and I heard they were doing a remake for television, I thought, how are they going to make that work? And so once I read the script, Matt Miller's script, I was so excited to be a part of it. I wanted it really bad. So when I read the script, I was like, oh gosh, I want to be in this television series. And it happened. So I'm really grateful.
I've seen the first couple of episodes and really enjoyed it. One of the interesting things is they don't directly copy from the films. It's sort of updated and, mm-hmm. and things have changed. One of the differences is with your character, she's a lawyer, which I don't think she was in the original. I could be wrong about that, but
no. You're right. She was actually a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
We found out by the third movie that she was a writer.
Right.
But before that, she was a stay-at-home mom, which is beautiful. There's, you know, I always say there's nothing wrong with that, but they they've updated it in such a way of 2016 in a way that this woman can do it all, really. She can have a high-powered job, a high-powered defense attorney, yet be a loving mother and a loving wife and be supportive and be the breadwinner. And that's okay. And so it was really lovely that they included that in this 2016 version. And also, you know, Riggs is now from the South. And and also Roger, in terms of the Roger in the movies, he wanted to retire. He wanted to be done with the job. As he says, he's too old for this bleep. Yeah. You know? But in our TV series, our Roger just had a massive heart attack, yet he wants to keep working. I love these two characters that they fight for those who can't fight for themselves, even when their lives are on the line, you know. I love it.
Yeah. The two leads are David Waynes and Glenn Crawford, and they work so well together. It's a really good duo. Yeah, yeah, I should also say the series has just been picked up for a second season as well, so congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What's it like working with Damon and Clay?
Oh my goodness. It's a ride. Their chemistry is great, and then the chemistry with Trish with the two of them is so dynamic as well. So I find myself laughing a lot, and I say this a lot, that I had to make my Trish fall in love with Roger for his humor. Otherwise, I would never get through the show because he has me laughing all the time.
Yeah.
And the same with Claim. Those two together are so funny. And And I also, it also helped me say, stop, you know, Trish, say, you know, it's not funny. Stop making me laugh. Like in the scene. So yeah, it's a thrill to work with the both of them.
That's another interesting change as well, is the fact that the, in the original films, they were more kind of, you know, comedic and straight guy. Whereas now you've kind of got two comedians, because I mean, Damon Wayans is a hilarious guy in himself anyway.
Absolutely.
But they've put that through to the characters, which I thought that was a really nice move.
Yeah, I think so too.
So do you end up sort of playing the straight man sometimes in those scenes?
Absolutely. With him and with Clayne, with the two of them. She gets moments where she gets to be the, you know, the fun of the joke.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it really is her trying to keep them on track. She's kind of like the mother to the, I hate to say mother, as that's my husband, you know, it's the husband, yeah. But you know, she kind of keeps them both, she keeps them both in line. And she's the, I want to say the heart between, I don't know the right word to use, but she kind of is the glue. That's the word I'm looking for. The glue that holds the two of them together. And that wasn't the case in the film.
No.
So it's nice to see that kind of dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. That works really well. And you've also, because she's a lawyer, you've got this interesting possibility of her getting pulled into more of the police storylines as well.
Absolutely. You'll see that you'll see that this season. You'll see it at the first season, that you'll see her. I always used to, before I saw the script, because I didn't know they were going to do this, and she would be pulled into some of their cases, but I thought that would be a great, just like you said, it would be a great thing to happen, and it does eventually happen. You'll see Trish and her element for sure, and how that affects the three of them.
Yeah,
it's a really great episode. You'll see. Yeah.
You've also got the two kids as well in the show. Chandra and Dante. How is it dealing with the teenage kids on set?
Oh, please. They're so well behaved. They both have great parents. So they're really great kids. Really different. It's funny. They kind of play the opposite of who they are on screen, because Dante is like the musician and he's the creative. And Chandler is more of the brains. You know, she's very, very smart. And not that Dante isn't, but they're just different, left brain, right brain. It's interesting that their characters are written opposite than who they are. But they're wonderful. And I got to say, I love the idea of, you said you've only seen the first two, but you'll see how parents of 2016 deal with the things that you have to deal with today with social media and boys and girls, and how different it is than when I was growing up, where, you know, there was no, well, I won't tell you all the stuff that's coming up, but it's interesting to see these two parents deal with that in a way that doesn't make their children cut them off and not communicate with them. It's a very fine line of how you raise kids today. And I think we're touching on that really well in the TV series.
Yeah, yeah. It's great practice as well, because your little boy's 12 years old, isn't he, I think? So,
yes.
So you're about to hit this.
Absolutely. I'm a little nervous, but I think we're going to do just fine. But it is scary, these teenagers today. They have to deal with so much in society, and it's just a different time, and you have to figure out, how do you balance that without being too strict? Because that's going to make them do what, you know, run and keep the line of communication, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a much harder job for parents and kids these days, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I think so too.
You were a huge fan of the original movies. Have you actually met any of the original cast or Darlene Love, who played the role in the films?
No, I haven't. I haven't met anyone. We're always making, you know, putting it out there anywhere we can, where we're like, wouldn't it be great or interesting if we can figure out a way to have Danny Glover or Mel Gibson or Darlene Love somehow in the series or as a cameo. I don't know what that would be, but it would be pretty cool. You know, we always talk about that. So I haven't met anyone yet.
Yes.
And with a big yet.
It would be interesting to bring them in as maybe your parents or something like that, you know?
Yes, absolutely. My like grumpy dad or something.
That'd be good.
Who used to be a cop and now I've married a cop. I don't know. That would be totally cool.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. What's been your most interesting experience on the show so far?
My most interesting. I think just in general, in terms of what they're, I love what the writers do and what they're able to do in terms of everybody gets a moment in this. Even with, you have the two main guys, you have Riggs and Roger. And I think it's so interesting how the writers are able to continue this process in a TV series, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that interesting that you, at first you're like, how are they going to sustain this show?
Yeah.
Even with the high octane level, it's like a film every episode, really. And it's interesting to watch it unfold, watch the writers do their thing and the directors and the producers. And I'm finding that more interesting than anything, and learning from it, to be honest, learning how are you able to do this? And they're doing this, such a great job. And I'm really proud of them.
Yeah, you shoot it in LA, don't you? Which isn't always the case for these sort of shows. Yeah. So that must be quite nice because you're LA based.
Yes, that's quite nice. But I'll tell you something. LA is a part of the show.
Yeah.
It's a character.
Yeah.
How do you shoot this show anywhere else?
Yeah.
You know, Clay made a joke months ago that he wanted, when they were trying to get him to do the part, he did mention, is it any way we can shoot in Alabama? And he makes a joke, but there's no way. That's a whole different show. But
absolutely.
I thought that was interesting.
As you mentioned, there's it's quite action packed. There's a lot of stunts, and as you say, it looks like a film every week. There's some incredible
week.
Yeah. Just the stuff, even, you know, in the episodes I saw, just the amount of work that must have gone into that sort of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. And it continues. You saw, too. Wait until you see. It gets better. It's pretty amazing that we as the show, are able to do such big production on a television series. And also our show, that's what's so great about the show. It has heart, it has drama, it has comedy, and it has action. And you can't say that about any show that's on television. We kind of hit everything in such a way that people like to escape through our show. And it's a feel-good show, you know. It's not too dark. It's just kind of perfectly balanced, I think.
Yeah, I mean, given that one of the main leads is essentially a suicidal cop, it's quite funny for a show that has that as a lead element.
Yeah.
With all the action stuff, is that something you want you'd like to get involved in a bit more?
Absolutely. You'll see one. You'll see something coming up. I won't tell you what, but she does. I shouldn't even say that. But the thing I've always said was, I do not want to be the damsel in distress. I'm a boxer. I'm a Krav Maga fighter. I want to be the one who's rescuing them. So I can't wait for that to happen more. They know that. Like, I say it all the time. Like, please don't let her be the woman who's like, save me. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'd like to see the woman, you know, be able to take care of herself.
Absolutely.
And be the savior, you know.
No, it's 2016. You want, like, the woman needs to be a much stronger character. You can't have her being rescued every week. That doesn't work.
Exactly. That's what I'm sure they know that. So we'll see what happens. You'll see some stuff this season, but I'll love to see more next season.
Okay. I've got a couple of final questions. First one is, because we cover a lot of TV shows on the website, there's two questions we always ask. The first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, wow. My favorite show that I'm obsessed with is Game of Thrones. And because it's not on right now, it doesn't come on until May. They're like killing me here. I just rewatch them over and over. I'm so obsessed with that show. That's my favorite show ever. And I love Homeland too. I've been watching that since the beginning.
Yeah.
Those are two that I watch religiously. And I have other ones that I watch and I enjoy. But those are my major ones, those two.
Okay, cool. And if you had the opportunity to work in any show, either past, present, or future, what show would it be?
Wow.
Not the one you're on, well, obviously.
One is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'm so obsessed with that show. I'm embarrassed to say so, like how obsessed I am. So I would love to be a role in that. Like, they have some brown skinned sister that they didn't know about. I don't know how that would work out. But I would sit around and try to figure that out.
Yeah.
Try to write that character in somehow. And then I love Golden Girls. It's one of my favorite shows.
Oh, wow.
I watch that still today. I love that show. So I would say, I'll put a comedy in there and say Golden Girls.
Awesome. Awesome. That's one we've never had before. I like that.
Really? Oh, good.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you for spending a bit of time with me. I'm looking forward
Absolutely.
To the show comes on fairly soon over here. So I'm looking forward to being able to watch the rest of it. It's a great show.
I can't wait for you to see it. I can't wait. I'm like, literally, you said you saw two episodes. Wait, yeah. it gets better. You know, it's so good. It's a really great, great show. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Right. Have a great day.
You too, honey. Okay, bye-bye.
Cheers, bye. So that was the interview with Lethal Weapon's Keisha Sharp. If you want to catch Lethal Weapon in the UK, it's on ITV at 9 p.m. on Friday nights, and I think they do repeats as well of it kind of throughout the week. So go and check on ITV for that. Next up, we have highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week on TV, you might notice we slightly changed this from being just air dates this time around. The reason being that the air date stuff was getting quite long-winded, and I thought it was probably better just to have us pick out a few things that is coming up in the next week. If you want to see all the air dates, updates and changes, you can go to geektown.co.uk. You'll find them all on there on the website. One quick renewal I did want to mention, which I forgot to put on the list. Star Wars Rebels has been renewed for a fourth season, which is not unsurprising at all.
No. There's no cancellations this week, are there?
No cancellations, I don't think, this week either. So next week on TV, things that you probably should look out for. BattleBots. Just before Top Gear came back this week, they also brought back Robot Wars as well, which is great fun. And BattleBots is the sort of bigger US, slightly more violent version of Robot Wars. So that's on Spike from 8 p.m. on the 8th of March. That's for its second season. Do you watch either of the robot battling programs?
I haven't seen BattleBots, and I haven't seen the new Dara fronted Robot Wars, but I used to watch it periodically when Craig Charles was in charge.
It's worth going to watch, particularly the Robot Wars one. I really enjoyed. Depending how you feel about American commentators, the BattleBots one might annoy you. But
it probably would, because they generally cannot stop talking for 2 seconds. They have to fill every silence. It's like when you watch their hockey
and sports coverage.
Ice hockey is a prime example. They're either talking all the time or somebody's playing a Hammond organ. They do not like silence at all.
Yeah, that's very true. So yeah, but I mean, there are American commentators. It's a different feel on BattleBots. It's the commentators are there live. It's not put on afterwards. It is interesting because the bots are very, very different, and they kind of restrict the number of flippers and things. So the battles are far more violent. That they go in much more for the destruction rather than trying to flip the other bots over. So it's really interesting. You do see some quite vicious robots in that. It's a good show, but that's on Spike. That's BattleBots season 2 on 8th of March at 8 p.m. Once Upon a Time is back for the second half of season 6, a possibly final season, maybe. We don't know yet. They're certainly talking about this being a great season of change. So if it does come back for a seventh season, it's going to be very different when it arrives back. But that's turning up on the 8th of March. I'm always very behind on Once Upon a Time. I really need to go and catch up. I think I probably am on season 6, but only just about at this point. So
right. I think I stopped about season 3.
Yeah, it was when it probably went off TV, you probably stopped, I would have thought. But it's now on Netflix, and it is a great little show, and they managed to kind of keep revitalizing it, you know, and adding new characters in and that sort of stuff. But they have said that if it comes back for a seventh season, there are going to be some major changes to it, so we'll see where that goes. Designated Survivor, also back for the second half of season 1. That's on the 10th of March on Netflix. Have you got Netflix? I can't remember whether you've got Netflix.
No, have Netflix. And that one I want to watch. It's not a Netflix original, is it? So I should.
No.
It should come out on disc at some point, and I'll hopefully be able to watch it.
Yeah, it should come across on disc, I would have thought. Kiefer Sutherland as the US cabinet member that finds himself becoming president. It was really good, really fun. Kiefer's always great on screen. Very good, twisty-turny plot, that. I really like that. Gadget Show, back for a 25th season. That's on Channel 5 on the 10th of March at 7 p.m. Now with adding Craig Charles on this show. And I think with this show, it's one of those things that you tend to drop in and out of. And what they're trying to do with this series is make it less, so people do that a lot less. So the idea is that they are going to try and make it so it's shot very close to the release of the show. They're like shooting it a few days beforehand, so they're probably in the process of shooting it now. They're shooting it in custom-built studios in Birmingham, and the idea is that it will be the most up-to-date it can be before it comes out, which I think's kind of interesting and different.
Well, given the pace of development of technology these days, you film it a week early and the stuff's obsolete by the time it goes to air.
But that was sort of the point, was the tech stuff comes out so quickly, they wanted to be able to make it as close to air date as they possibly could. So they're going to have film sequences, but they are looking at things like the Nintendo Switch this week. So they are putting gaming stuff back in as well. So I think it's going to be worth a watch because it is a new lineup, 25 seasons in. But that's on the 10th of March on Channel 5 at 7 p.m.
You think that presumably that with an Apple event coming up this month, they'll presumably include that.
I would have thought so, yes. I would have thought that'll get some coverage.
Yeah, okay.
Big Little Lies. This is Sky Atlantic's latest new big drama. It's a HBO show. It's from David E. Kelly, who is very well-known writer. Starred Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Charlene Woodley. It's about conflict, secrets and betrayals and murder in a tranquil seaside town of Monterey in California. There have been trailers all over it on Sky Atlantic at the moment. It's coming on the 13th of March. It's 9 or 10 p.m. I haven't got the time down here, but it's called Big Little Lies. Looks quite good. And given the writer and the casting, I think it's going to be one to watch.
Yeah, David E. Kelly of Friends, presumably.
I think you might be thinking of somebody else. He wrote...
David Crane, I'm thinking of. David E. Kelly, somebody else, okay.
David E. Kelly was the man behind Ally McBeal, Boston Public and Boston Legal.
Boston Legal, Boston. Well, if he's the man behind Boston Legal, then it should be quite good. Although, of course, if it doesn't have William Shatner in it, then it... you knew that was coming at some point.
I do. You had to get a William Shatner reference in, and that was the opportunity. that's coming on the 13th of March. It's difficult to tell exactly what it's going to be about, but it looks like it could be quite interesting. So we'll see. And finally, Vampire Diaries, back for the second half of its final season, season 8, on the 14th of March at 11:55 p.m. This will arrive. So just scraping in before midnight. I love that show. It's been a good run. It's been really fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they wrap things up in the end.
I'm also looking forward to the end of it. But for different reasons.
Harsh.
Sorry. we kind of agree on something, but for completely different
And on that note, I think we should probably end, unless you've got anything else you want to add in.
I've got a couple more titles that I just wanted to run by.
Hopefully. Go on.
The BBC's very, very excellent Line of Duty is due back extremely soon. In fact, we should hopefully have an air date for it, perhaps later this week.
Okay.
Although the BBC air dates are quite hard to come by.
Yes.
Fargo, Ewan McGregor playing two brothers, and the tone of Fargo this time sits very well with his early performance in Shallow Grave.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one. It's one of the best things around right now, Fargo.
Yeah.
It is back in the USSR on the, no, back in the USA on 19th of April, so shouldn't hopefully be too much longer here.
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
Prison Break, we've been asked about that, back in the US in a few weeks' time, but no UK buyer yet.
Nope.
Gotham, any news? What the kapow boom is going on with this one, Batman?
It is on Channel 5. Channel 5 have got the rights to it, but they are holding on to it at the moment. For what reason, I have no idea, But they are saying the only thing they will tell me is it will come later in the year. They did talk about maybe summer. Why?
We're getting very close to the date for the third season in the US, and we're going to start getting the usual comments.
Yeah. What has possessed them to hold it this long? I don't know. It's one of those occasions, although you know our stance against streaming, but what do they expect to happen at this point, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why they are holding on to it for so long, I have no idea. It seems like an idiotic move on the part of Channel 5, but they have it.
So, 5, if you're listening, we need some answers, please.
I have asked them repeatedly. The only thing they can say at the moment is that they think it's going to be, I think they said possibly summer. It may be later, though. I mean, you literally could have a point where they're airing it as the next season is going out in the US. So who knows? Yeah. Which is ridiculous, but
it does. There'll be a reason. We just don't know what it is. That doesn't make sense. Last two things. Game of Thrones, little known program about swords and stuff. It seems to have slipped a bit further from the end of June to July, according to Liam Cunningham.
Yes, I saw that.
A teaser appeared on the internet, and whose hand was holding the sword and why it's important. I suppose there'll be forums and things dedicated to that very question.
Yes.
Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen, said season 7 will blow your mind, although in fairness she's unlikely to say otherwise.
True.
There are only 14 episodes left, and then a rumoured prequel from 2019, so more news on that if we have it. What do you think of that?
I'm all up for having a prequel, in all honesty. Because I love Game of Thrones so much, I will happily let them continue the story as long as it's the same quality that it was. I think that could be quite interesting. There's enough history. It's like Lord of the Rings, you know, there's enough history that already set up by George R. R. Martin that you can dive back into it, I think, without any problem at all.
Yeah, It would be presumably a prequel about the Mad King or whatever, but I think a Game of Thrones prequel crossover with the Sons of Anarchy prequel would be brilliant. And we're all about crossovers these days.
Yeah.
Last, but by no means least, probably the biggest TV air date news for the whole week, keeping up with the, what are they called, Kardashians. Season 13 begins on the 12th of March at 12:30, I don't care, on Channel Something.
Do we really have to end on the Kardashians?
Surely. And on that bombshell.
And they seem to have ditched that, which is
which is a shame.
Yes, which is a shame. So yes, I think we've been on long enough. We should go now.
I'm going off to look up History Today clips on YouTube. That's what I'm going to do now.
Good. Well, I shall leave you with my usual ending spiel of if you want to find the latest UK air dates and news and TV information, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week and get all the latest stuff. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, you can email podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, at Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bow, 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 bow.